Good evening. Welcome. It's November 4th, 2023. The time is 1950 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Hard to read from this particular distance with these glasses. On that screen, it's Eastern Daylight Time, 1950 hours. Ward Green with you. Born and Raised, Chapter 10, Paragraph 10. We've got a lot to cover again today, so let's get to it and try and catch up from yesterday. Since 1914, Jehovah's people have believed that we are living in the time of the harvest for true Christians. This has caused the undertaking of a worldwide work of preaching the good news of Jehovah's kingdom in faith. Millions of faithful ones have been taught by Jehovah. They symbolize their dedication by baptism in water, as Jesus did at the commencement of his earthly ministry, just as Jesus had both followers and persecutors. True Christians today undergo persecution from wicked ones. Often, such persecution comes from family or clergymen. Those learning to make positive changes in their lives put pressure on cultural values in the eyes of others, because these are afraid to depart from the traditions of their forefathers, or stubborn. They exert pressure back on faithful ones in an attempt to make them quit. The fine example of the true teaching of Jesus will be appreciated by many as being a highly desirable thing. Honesty is but one of the many good fruits it bears. Employers often appreciate this quality, even if it is true that Christian employees cannot be caused to lie. Theft by honest-hearted believers just doesn't happen. The teaching of Jesus is not always thought to be a good thing, not by everybody. Even though one of its fruitages is honesty. And many people appreciate honesty, although some employers may want their employees to lie at certain times. And a Christian doesn't lie, and a Christian doesn't steal either. So it's quite clear that it's controversial, even though the teaching of Jesus is very good. It's also controversial. Some people find it to be more desirable to keep with the traditions of the old church, even if those traditions involve behavior and ceremonies that are not Christian in nature, because of the false teachings of the church that don't agree with what Jesus taught. That happens in many cases, such as, for example, the use of images in worship. It's one example. Our scripture for today, we must move on, is Proverbs chapter 2. Proverbs is the 20th book of the Bible. Chapter 2, verse 10, when wisdom enters into your heart, little ones, and knowledge itself becomes pleasant to your very soul. That is when thinking ability itself will keep guard over you. It's when wisdom enters into your heart and knowledge itself becomes pleasant to your very soul. Let's move on again. We want to get through this today if we can. 1 Samuel chapter 4 now. We got tied up in, and I was so excited about the book of 1 Samuel because of the chronological information. And the word of Samuel continued to come to all Israel. So at this point, Samuel could be, in fact, he is about, we don't know when he was born, I guess. He could have been born sometime around 1170, not much later than that. And not much earlier, but and I shouldn't say not much, I should say not, I meant to say not much earlier than that. He couldn't be born earlier than that because Eli would not have been a judge yet, and we'll see why in this chapter, because he dies at the age of 98 and he judged for 40 years, which means he began to judge at the age of 58, and he died in the year 1132, which we're going to see also is because the Ark of the Covenant came to be with the it came to be at Kiriath Jearim for 20 years before Samuel recaptured it and defeated the Philistines in 1112 BCE. So the 20 years added to 1112 means 1132 was when the Ark was taken back from the Philistines after being with them for 7 months. So all of this is from 1 Samuel. And the word of Samuel continued to come to all Israel. Then Israel went out to meet the Philistines in battle, and they took up camping alongside Ebenezer. And the Philistines themselves encamped in Aphek. And the Philistines proceeded to draw up in formation to meet Israel. And the battle went badly, so that Israel was defeated before the Philistines, who went striking down about 4,000 men in closed battle line in the field. When the people came to the camp, the older men of Israel began to say, "Why did Jehovah defeat us today before the Philistines? Let us take to ourselves from Shiloh the Ark of Jehovah's covenant, that it may come into our midst and may save us from the palm of our enemies." So the people sent to Shiloh and carried from there the Ark of the covenant of Jehovah of armies, who is sitting upon the cherubs. And the two sons of Eli were there with the Ark of the Covenant of the true God, namely Hophni and Phinehas. And it came about that as soon as the Ark of the Covenant of Jehovah came into the camp, all the Israelites broke out into loud shouting, so that the earth was in a stir. The Philistines also got to hear the sound of the shouting and began saying, "What does the sound of this loud shouting in the camp of the Hebrews mean?" Finally, they got to know that the Ark of Jehovah itself had come into the camp. And the Philistines became afraid because they said, "God has come into the camp." So they said, "Woe to us, for such a thing as this never occurred before. Woe to us, who will save us from the hand of this majestic God? This is the God that was the smiter of Egypt with every sort of slaughter in the wilderness. Show yourselves courageous and prove yourselves men, you Philistines, that you may not serve the Hebrews just as they have served you. And you must prove yourselves men and fight." So this is, you know, the midway point, when the Philistines have already been oppressing the Hebrews for 20 years, which we will see later on. Accordingly, the Philistines fought and Israel was defeated, and they went fleeing, each one to his tent, and the slaughter came to be very great. So that out of Israel there fell 30,000 men on foot, and the Ark of God itself was captured. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, could be pronounced Eli. The name Eli could be Eli. Hophni and Phinehas, his sons, died, and a man of Benjamin went running from the battle line, so that he arrived at Shiloh on that day with his garments ripped apart and dirt on his head. When he arrived, there was Eli sitting on the seat by the roadside watching, because his heart had become a tremble over the Ark of the true God. And the man himself went in to report in the city, and the whole city began crying out. And Eli got to hear the sound of the outcry. So he said, "What does the sound of this turmoil mean?" And the man himself hurried that he might go in and report to Eli. Now Eli was, now this is the point we see, 98 years old, and his eyes had set, so that he was unable to see. 98 years old, this is the chronological information. So he was born in 1230, 98 years earlier, with this event being in 1132 BCE. And the man proceeded to say to Eli, "I am the one coming from the battle line, And it is from the battle line that I have fled today. At this he said, "What is the thing that has happened, my son?" So the news bearer answered and said, "Israel has fled before the Philistines, and there has also occurred a great defeat among the people, and also your own two sons have died, Hophni and Phinehas, and the very ark of the true God has been captured." And it came about at that moment that he mentioned the ark of the true God, he began to fall from the seat backward beside the gate, and his neck got broken so that he died, because the man was old and heavy, and he himself had judged Israel 40 years. So Eli had judged 40 years, from the age of 58 to the age of 98, is what we learn. And a priest would have begun serving as priest at the age of 30. But 40 years earlier would be 1172, with this event in 1132. And his daughter-in-law, the wife of Phinehas, was pregnant near to giving birth, and she got to hear the report that the ark of the true God was captured and that her father-in-law and her husband had died. At that, she bowed herself and began giving birth because her pangs came unexpectedly upon her. And about the time of her death, the women standing by her began to speak. "Do not be afraid, because it is a son that you have born." And she did not answer, and did not set her heart on it, but she called the boy Ichabod, saying, "Glory has gone away from Israel into exile." This with reference to the ark of the true gods being captured, and with reference to her father-in-law and her husband, both of whom had died. So she said, "Glory has gone away from Israel into exile, because the ark of the true God has been captured." That's remarkable, but if we could just go on a little ways, the Philistines took the ark in chapter 5. In chapter 6, it proved to be in the field of the Philistines 7 months. And in chapter 7, it dwelt in Kiriath Jearim 20 years in verse 2, after it was taken back from the Philistines. So there's 20 years prior to 1112, when Samuel defeated the Philistines. That's how we get 1132. And Samuel judged for 12 years according to Josephus, at which point Saul became king in 1100 BCE. So we work back from 1100, we add 12, we get 1112, we add 20 years for the ark. And also 7 months because of its capture. But if we ignore the 7 months for now, we have 1132, or maybe 1133 with the 7 months, but not necessarily another year. So, but 1133, then we have Eli beginning to judge in 1173, which is perfectly in harmony with the 23 years of Tola from 1196 to 1173 in Judah, or on the west side of the Jordan, when Eli would have taken up the judgeship exactly at that time in 1173. So it fits. The chronology is perfect. But we have a lot to cover. We have a lot to cover. That has nothing to do with chronology today, but it has to do with catching up on our book of Jeremiah. Chapter 7, we were in chapter 7. Well, we still seem to be doing well on time, but in chapter 7, we only got yesterday as far as verse 17. "Are you not seeing what they are doing in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem? The sons, Jehovah says, are picking up sticks of wood, and the fathers are lighting the fire, and the wives are kneading flour dough in order to make sacrificial cakes to the Queen of the Heavens. And there is a pouring out of drink offerings to other gods for the purpose of offending me. Is it I whom they are offending?" is the utterance of Jehovah. "Is it not they themselves for the purpose of shame to their faces? Therefore, this is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah has said. Look, my anger and my rage are being poured forth upon this place, upon mankind, and upon domestic animal, and upon the tree of the field, and upon the fruitage of the ground, and it must burn, and it will not be extinguished." This is what Jehovah of armies, the God of Israel, has said. Verse 21. "Add those whole burnt offerings of yours to your sacrifices, and eat flesh. For I did not speak with your forefathers, nor did I command them in the day of my bringing them out from the land of Egypt concerning the matters of whole burnt offering and sacrifice. But this word I did express in command upon them, saying, Obey my voice, and I will become your God. And you yourselves will become my people, and you must walk in all the way that I shall command you, in order that it may go well with you. But they did not listen, neither did they incline their ear, but they went walking in the counsels, in the stubbornness of their bad heart, so that they became backward in direction and not forward, from the day that your forefathers came forth out of the land of Egypt until this day. And I kept sending to you all my servants the prophets, daily getting up early and sending them. But they did not listen to me, and they did not incline their ear, but they kept hardening their neck. They acted worse than their forefathers. And you must speak to them all these words, but they will not listen to you. And you must call to them, but they will not answer you. And you must say to them, This is the nation whose people have not obeyed the voice of Jehovah its God, and have not taken discipline. Faithfulness has perished, and it has been cut off from their mouth. Shear off your uncut hair and throw it away, and upon the bare hills raise a dirge, for Jehovah has rejected and will desert the generation with which he is furious. For the sons of Judah have done what is bad in my eyes, is the utterance of Jehovah. They have set their disgusting things in the house upon which my name has been called, in order to defile it. And this is the part we read yesterday. And they have built the high places of Topheth, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom, in order to burn their sons and their daughters in the fire, a thing that I had not commanded, and that had not come up into my heart. Therefore, look, days are coming, is the utterance of Jehovah, when it will no more be said to be Topheth and the valley of the son of Hinnom, but the valley of the killing. And they will have to bury in Topheth without there being enough place. And the dead bodies of this people must become food for the flying creatures of the heavens and for the beasts of the earth, with nobody to make them tremble. And I will cause to cease from the cities of Judah and from the streets of Jerusalem the voice of exultation and the voice of rejoicing, the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride, for the land will become nothing but a devastated place. Continuing Jeremiah 8 now, where we've caught up. At that time is the utterance of Jehovah. People will also bring forth the bones of the kings of Judah, and the bones of its princes, and the bones of the priests, and the bones of the prophets, and the bones of the inhabitants of Jerusalem from their graves. And they will actually spread them out to the sun, and to the moon, and to all the army of the heavens, that they have loved, and that they have served, and that they have walked after, and that they have sought, and that they have bowed down to. They will not be gathered, nor will they be buried. As manure upon the face of the ground they will become. And death will certainly be chosen rather than life on the part of all the remnant of those remaining out of this bad family, and all the places of the remaining ones, where I will have dispersed them, is the utterance of Jehovah of armies. And you must say to them, This is what Jehovah has said. Will they fall and not get up again? If one would turn back, will the other not also turn back? Why is it that this people, Jerusalem, is unfaithful with an enduring unfaithfulness? They have taken hold of trickiness. They have refused to turn back. I have paid attention, and I kept listening. It was not right, the way they kept speaking. There was not a man repenting over his badness, saying, What have I done? Each one is going back into the popular course, like a horse that is dashing into the battle. Even the stork in the heavens, it well knows its appointed times, and the turtle dove and the swift and the bulbul, they observe well the time of each one's coming in. But as for my people, they have not come to know the judgment of Jehovah. How can you men say we are wise, and the law of Jehovah is with us? Surely now the false stylus of the secretaries has worked in sheer falsehood. The wise ones have become ashamed. They have become terrified and will be caught. Look, they have rejected the very word of Jehovah, and what wisdom do they have? Therefore I shall give their wives to other men, their fields to those taking possession. For from the least one even to the greatest one, each one is making unjust gain. From the prophet even to the priest, each one is acting falsely. And they try to heal the breakdown of the daughter of my people lightly, saying, There is peace, there is peace. When there is no peace, did they feel shame because they had done even what was detestable? For one thing, they positively could not feel ashamed. For another thing, they did not know even how to feel humiliated. Therefore, they will fall among those who are falling. In the time of their being given attention, they will stumble, Jehovah has said. When doing the gathering, I shall bring them to their finish, is the utterance of Jehovah. There will be no grapes on the vine, and there will be no figs on the fig tree, and the foliage itself will certainly wither, and things that I give to them will pass by them. Why are we sitting still? Gather yourselves together, and let us enter into the fortified cities and be silent there. For Jehovah our God has himself put us to silence, and he gives us poisoned water to drink, because we have sinned against Jehovah. There was a hoping for peace, but no good came, for a time of healing, but look, terror. From Dan has been heard the snorting of his horses. Due to the sound of the neighing of his stallions, the whole land has begun to rock, and they come in and eat up the land and what fills it, the city and its inhabitants. For here I am sending in among you serpents, poisonous snakes, for which there is no charming, and they will certainly bite you, is the utterance of Jehovah. A grief that is beyond curing has come up into me. My heart is ill. Here there is the sound of the cry for help of the daughter of my people from a land far away. Is Jehovah not in Zion, or is her king not in her? Why is it that they have offended me with their graven images, with their vain foreign gods? The harvest has passed, the summer has come to an end. But as for us, we have not been saved. Over the breakdown of the daughter of my people, I have become shattered. I have grown sad. Outright astonishment has seized hold of me. Is there no balsam in Gilead, or is there no healer there? Why is it then that the recuperation of the daughter of my people has not come up? That's the end of Jeremiah 8, and we're now completely caught up. Thank Jehovah Jesus. Let's go and get Hebrews chapter 8 done before we hesitate. Hebrews 8, now as to the things being discussed, this is the main point. We have such a high priest as this, Jesus, that is, and he has sat down at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens, a public servant of the holy place and of the true tent which Jehovah put up, and not man. For every high priest is appointed to offer both gifts and sacrifices. Wherefore it was necessary for this one also to have something to offer. If now he were upon earth, he would not be a priest, there being men who offer the gifts according to the law, but which men are rendering sacred service in a typical representation and a shadow of the heavenly things. In Paul's time, or when this letter was written, they still were offering sacrifices in the earthly temple at Jerusalem, the temple of Israel, of Jehovah's temple, which Israel provided priests for in Jerusalem. Just as Moses went about to make the tent in completion, was given the divine command, for says he, see that you make all things after their pattern that was shown to you in the mountain. It's a typical representation that the service was at the temple. But now Jesus has obtained a more excellent public service. So that he is also the mediator of a correspondingly better covenant, which has been legally established upon better promises. For if that first covenant had been faultless, no place would have been sought for a second. For he does find fault with the people when he says, look, there are days coming, says Jehovah, and I will conclude with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah a new covenant, not according to the covenant that I made with their forefathers in the day of my taking hold of their hand to bring them forth out of the land of Egypt, because they did not continue in my covenant, so that I stopped caring for them. Now, there's a new covenant. That's directly quoting from Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 31. So it's in the book of Jeremiah from which the new covenant as a prophecy comes. For this is the covenant, that in verse 10 now, that I shall covenant with the house of Israel after those days, says Jehovah. I will put my laws in their mind, and in their hearts I shall write them. And I will become their God, and they themselves will become my people. That's Jeremiah 31 and verse 33. And they will by no means teach each one his fellow citizen and each one his brother, saying, Know Jehovah. For they will all know me, from the least one to the greatest one of them. For I shall be merciful to their unrighteous deeds, and I shall by no means call their sins to mind any more. In his saying, quote, a new covenant, unquote, he has made the former one obsolete. Now that which is made obsolete and growing old is near to vanishing away. And that is the law of Moses, which was made obsolete by the new covenant. It was a pattern that Moses was to follow, but it was a pattern also that would and was to prefigure the new covenant. It was to be foreshadowing the later and better covenant that was to come, which was the new covenant under the priest Christ Jesus, who is administering the new covenant, which is forever, because he lives forever. He doesn't have to die. He dies no more. So these are interesting principles there. We see that we've been studying the book of Jeremiah, so we saw that the Israelites were not faithful. And we're finding that out as we read the book of Jeremiah. But there are other prophets that talk about the same problem, the unfaithfulness of Israel. I was looking at, remarkably, I saw this in amazing, remarkable scripture in Zechariah today. Chapter 7, in the fourth year of Darius the king, verse 1, in the fourth year, on the fourth day of the ninth month, which would be sort of like January, the word of Jehovah occurred to Zechariah. The fourth year of Darius would be about 518. Because, well, that's with 522 as year one, and January being the very beginning of the next calendar year in the Julian calendar, which is very close to the calendar we use today, but it's January is the very beginning of the year, so the fourth year in January would be 4 years after year one. If his year one began after January in 522, it's very close to 518 BCE for year four. And then look what he says in verse 5. Say to all the people of the land and to the priests, quote, when you fasted and there was a wailing in the fifth month and in the seventh month, and this for 70 years. So there we have it, 70 years from 588. 588 would be 70 years earlier than 518, and that would be the time of the, if it was, it was about a 6 month siege, wasn't it? Let's see, five. It was, I mean, about an 18 months. It was either, some people said it was 30 months and other people 18 months. But I think even if we have it as 18 months, the siege, if it's only 18 months, then from 587 in the middle of the summer sometime, we go back to 588 sometime around again, January, wouldn't it be? Depending on what month of the summer it occurred. It's very close to being 70 years, this time period. that's talked about that had come about since the siege of Jerusalem in 588 at the latest. It could have been even 589. So it could have been, it's at least 70 years, it looks like, or very close to being a minimum of 70 years, which is exactly right. If it's 70 years, it's exactly right. So it's very close to showing that this the destruction of Jerusalem was in 587. That's what we can see from this. That's when it was destroyed, 587, because the fourth year of Darius is a very strong point there, a strong chronological anchor from which we can calculate back. So that's phenomenal. I saw that today. I was excited about that. It's thrilling. But I want to talk, if we have a little more time, I just would like to talk a little bit more about 1 Samuel again, because it's so critically important, but it's so exciting to see that we can arrive at these dates in the fourth. We're almost out of time, but therefore we go back. Now, Samuel was old when he grown old in chapter 8, verse 1. He tried to make his sons judges, but they were too corrupt, and the older men came together in verse 4, and eventually they said, "We want a king here." I mean, immediately after coming to him, they said they wanted a king in verse 6. And that's when they got a king, and that was King Saul in 1100 BCE. So we add 12 years for Samuel's judgeship according to Josephus. Maybe that 12 years is not very exact because it's from Josephus, but it works out really well, because then when we add in 1 Samuel 7 and 2, the 20 years that the ark was in Kiriath-Jearim after the Israelites got it back from the Philistines, and that was in 1112 when the Philistines were defeated. That was the end of the 20 years when Samuel defeated the Philistines, which we're going to come to and read hopefully soon. Then it all works back to 20 years earlier, to 1132, when the Philistines captured the ark, which is right in the middle of their 40-year domination period. So it's exactly right for the chronology we have of Eli and everybody, working out really well with Samuel born at about 1170 or maybe even 1160, sometime in that range, 1170 to 1160 BCE. Fits very well for all of the events talked about here. And that's it for our study for today. It's Saturday, November 4th, 2023. The time is 2023 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I love you very much. I'm Ward Green. This is, on my behalf, Crow, my beloved Hamilton watch, and Cassie, my Casio digital watch, saying bye for now.